The long overdue budget process is finally wrapping up, but Governor Walker is already undoing some significant additions to the bill. Also, new questions are emerging over the Foxconn deal. Do the legislature's attorneys think Governor Walker and Republican lawmakers went too far? We run recent Foxconn statements through the PolitiFact Truthometer. Plus, we look at an upcoming story on the costs of renting in Milwaukee. All that, plus winners and losers, and your questions, today on JS on Politics. Welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Mary Spacuzza. I'm joined now by Jason Stein in our Madison Bureau. And Jason, thanks for joining us. Today is a big day, obviously, because it proves that better late than never when it comes to the state budget, which we apparently have. It sounds like Governor Walker is going to be signing that soon. It's obviously late, and it looks a lot different than what passed the legislature. What happened?
So the governor made 99 partial vetoes. The Wisconsin governor has one of, if not the most powerful partial veto pens in the country. And so he made a number of changes to the bill. Probably the most significant one that he made was vetoing a provision that would have allowed the districts that right now, the school districts that spend the least on their students, to start to spend hundreds of dollars more on each of those students, you know, in the coming years. And so that was removed for the budget to, you know, the disappointment of the Assembly Republicans who put it in.
And he also signed another bill this week, which has been talked about quite a bit. Tell us about that one.
Right. So the governor signed a $3 billion bill to provide incentives to the Taiwanese company Foxconn Technology Group to bring a flat screen plant to Racine County in Wisconsin. And that bill also contains provisions to exempt the company from certain environmental rules and provide preferential treatment to lawsuits that involve the company or, you know, the provisions around the plant. And, you know, that last provision has generated some controversy.
It sounds like there are some new questions about some of the exceptions that they made for Foxconn that were raised by some of the legislature's own attorneys this week. What happened with that?
Right. So the Wisconsin Legislative Council, which provides nonpartisan legal advice to lawmakers, they put out a memo yesterday or earlier in the week saying that it was possible, not definitive, but possible that a court could find some of those provisions were unconstitutional. Now, those provisions basically expedite litigation that involves Foxconn, makes it easier for that case to get quickly to the state Supreme Court, and it also puts an automatic stay or suspension on any lower trial court rulings in a case involving Foxconn until a higher court weighs in. And so what the Ledge Council memo said was that that might be, you know, an unconstitutional intrusion by lawmakers into sort of the purview of the court system.
Well, speaking of Foxconn, I spoke earlier with PolitiFact Wisconsin reporter Tom Kircher about some of his recent Foxconn fact checks, among others. Here's what he had to say. I'm joined now by Tom Kircher, a PolitiFact Wisconsin reporter here at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's been very busy fact-checking lately, so we're going to run through some of your most recent fact-checks.
Right.
This one comes from Andy Gronick, who said Wisconsin is guaranteeing Foxconn almost $3 billion, but Foxconn is not contractually guaranteeing how many full-time employees it will hire, for how long, and at what pay. And you rated that one half true. Why?
Well, it's correct that Foxconn is not making any jobs guarantees, so there's no minimum number they're committing to. But in terms of what the state is offering, the $3 billion would be paid, would be guaranteed, only if Foxconn does certain things. In rough terms, spends about $10 billion on its plant and employs about 13,000 people.
And there would be kind of steps, so they wouldn't get like all the money at once, correct?
That's right. It's not a flat guarantee, so it's sort of pay as you go.
Okay.
The more the company invests, the more people they hire, the more incentive payments they would get.
Got it. Okay. This next one came from Scott Walker, who said, Foxconn didn't promise to build a plant in Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania changed, or I'm sorry, didn't keep a promise to build a plant in Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania changed governors. You called that one mostly false.
It's true that Foxconn dropped its plans to build a plant in Pennsylvania after the governors went from Republican to Democrat, but Walker's statement is misleading because the Foxconn announcement really gained no traction at all. There was no progress toward making a factory for a full year while the Republican governor was still in office. So it's misleading to suggest that the change in governor made a difference in that plant.
Okay. The next one was from One Wisconsin Now. Liberal group. They said Wisconsin's $3 billion incentive offer to Foxconn is the largest gift ever by a state to a foreign company. And you call that one half true.
Yeah, it's not a gift. As we just covered, Foxconn would have to hire thousands of people, spend billions of dollars to get billions in payments. But if Wisconsin does end up paying $3 billion to Foxconn, it would be the largest incentive payment ever made by a state to a foreign company.
Okay. I bet Scott Ross disagreed with you on your rating, but...
Maybe a little.
Okay. Sean Duffy said Vermont had to scrap its single-payer health insurance program because it was going bankrupt, and that was false.
The single-payer is back in the news. Bernie Sanders wants to introduce that at a national level. It was tried in Vermont to the extent that authorization was approved in 2011 to offer single payer, but it was never actually put in place. The program was never actually started. So it's false for Duffy to say that it was going bankrupt because, in fact, it never got started.
Okay. This one came from Mark Pocan, our U.S. representative from Madison. He says the U.S. Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, wants to use a government jet that costs $25,000 per hour for his honeymoon. Oh, that was referring to his recent honeymoon this summer, right? And
yeah,
you called that one mostly true.
Yeah, when Pocan says that the secretary wants to use a government plane, it's not a current request. It was made for earlier this summer. The Treasury Secretary got married, asked for a government plane to take him to Europe for the honeymoon, and the Air Force estimated that that plane could cost $25,000 per hour to operate.
It's interesting because he and his wife had had questions about their trip to Kentucky with another flight, where she actually mentioned the honeymoon in
right.
her kind of Instagram fight with someone.
And both those trips actually have led to the Inspector General's office in the Department of Treasury to review the Secretary's travel.
All right. The last one is from House Speaker Paul Ryan, a Republican from Janesville, who said, we've got about $3 trillion trapped in overseas cash that basically can't come back to this country because of our tax laws. And you called that one mostly true.
So what Ryan is referring to are the foreign profits of American-based multinational corporations. So there is about $3 trillion that have not been brought back to the parent companies here in the United States. The driving reason for that is that it would face a 35% corporate tax in the United States.
And this is part of his tax overhaul plan that he's going to give us details on next week, because we haven't heard much specifics other than it's going to overhaul the tax code, fit on a postcard, and simplify things.
And in this instance, his argument is if the 35% rate is lowered, more companies would bring more of their cash back to their parent companies here in the United States, perhaps invest in their factories, hire more people. You know, that remains to be seen, of course.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. We
you
appreciate
bet.
It. Thanks. The Journal Sentinel's been working on a series looking at the 50-year anniversary of Milwaukee's open housing marches. The most recent story is from reporter Kevin Crow, who's been looking at the costs of renting in Milwaukee. Here's what he had to say. I'm joined now by Kevin Crow, a reporter here at the Journal Sentinel. And Kevin, you've been looking at rentals and what people are spending in terms of percentage of their income that they're spending on rent in the city and the county of Milwaukee.
Right.
What are you finding?
So one of the things that we found is, you know, personal finance experts say that people shouldn't spend more than 30% of their income on rent, so that they have money for other things like food, clothing, you know, cell phone expenses, all that kind of stuff. But in Milwaukee, the people's finances are pretty tight. So we found that nearly one in three people are spending at least 50%, and often cases more, of their monthly income just to put a roof over their head.
And what are the implications of that? I assume that affects transportation, whether they can buy a car to get to work. What are some of the
costs? Well, I mean, you know, think about the monthly costs you have in your life, right? So, I mean, you've got a mortgage or you've got rent. And then, you know, if you have children, you've got to buy stuff for school, clothes, uniforms, other kinds of insurance, if you're going to have any kind of insurance, cell phone. So, you know, the things that people can do in their daily lives become greatly limited, and their finances get really stressed when they have to put such a huge portion of their income towards rent.
And who's being hit the hardest by this in Milwaukee from what you've seen?
So it's really people in poor communities, because, you know, if you think about the scale of rent, paying 50% of your income or more on rent is very different if your income is only $24,000 a year versus, you know, maybe $50,000 or $60,000 a year. That puts you on a much shorter leash economically. And so in rents in some of the poor areas in Milwaukee are actually quite high. So they may be, you know, $750, $800 a month, which, you know, if you're only making that $24,000 a year, puts you in a really tight spot.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to reading your story. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. I'm joined now by reporter Bill Glauber and, again, Jason Stein in Madison. And now it's time for winners and losers. Jason, we're going to go to you first. Who's your winner this week?
Well, I kind of have a paint-by-numbers winners and losers. I think Bill's got the best winner. But, you know, clearly Governor Scott Walker had a good week. He got his Foxconn bill signed into law. He is, as we speak, signing the state budget in Neenah, which really contains the vast majority of what he wanted. It's going to hold down property taxes. It's going to provide a pretty large increase for K-12 schools. So he, you know, has set himself up for a difficult reelection, you know, with a couple of bills here that give him some things that he can talk about on the campaign trail.
And what about your loser?
You know, my loser this week is Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Obviously, it was a mixed week for Voss. It was also a big win for him to get the Foxconn bill. But really, a lot of the major things that got put in the budget by Assembly Republicans dropped out in the Walker vetoes, including that low-spending school district provision I told you about earlier.
Okay, thank you. What about you, Bill? Who's your loser
this
week?
David A. Clark, Jr., former Milwaukee County Sheriff. CNN reported that, you know, that paper he had turned in, that there was alleged plagiarism in. He has to redo it with the Naval Postgraduate School.
If he wants to keep his degree,
if he wants to keep his degree. And then he got into a vulgar tiff last day and a half with one of our colleagues, Dan Bice. Those two go at it time and time again. And, you know, it's interesting. He's gone, but not forgotten. And it'll be interesting to see what his taxpayer-funded pension will be.
And I think the question was whether he was going to hire private security now that he no longer had sheriff's deputies.
Yeah, I mean, he had run up, you know, sheriff's deputies. It was $250,000 over the last few months to pay for private security. Not saying that, you know, he should not have been nervous because there had been some threats against him, but that seemed a bit excessive. And that's only maybe half the total, so it could be $500,000 for sheriffs to provide 24/7 security for the now former Milwaukee County Sheriff David A. Clark Jr., who's gone but not forgotten.
Right, and we probably can't even say his response to
Mr.
Bice on TV.
We can't.
Okay, but they can read about it on Twitter or in the news because it sounds like it's getting reported by Fox News and others.
Yes,
so
it is.
It's online for those who want to read it. What about your winner?
Well, winner in a... It's not a winner. It's just a reminder of heroism and the fragility of life. Kevin Little, who was the 10-year-old who tried to shield his younger cousin, from a fire, both perished. His family will receive the Carnegie Medal for heroism. And it truly is a reminder of the fragility of life and that in each of us is the chance to act heroically, even in the most dreadful situation. So it's a winner in, you know, a very sad, somber way.
Yeah. Well, a pretty amazing little boy he must have
Absolutely.
Been. Absolutely. So, all right, we've got some viewer questions to get to. One comes from Indivisible, and I think I'll send this one to Jason. Jason, you've done a lot of reporting on transportation. Indivisible asked, how do we solve the funding problem that has blown a huge hole in our transportation budget and was not addressed in the latest budget?
Well, I'm glad I'm getting this 30-second period to solve this.
I'm sending
this
you the easy questions.
This problem has bedeviled the state for years, and I'm up to it. I can solve it here in the next 15 seconds. The state can do one of two things. It can spend less money, or it can tax people more. So, you know, what the public has got to decide is, do they want to see, you know, the state try and become more efficient and just flat out do fewer highway and bridge projects? Or, you know, do they want to see 5 cents more on a gallon of gas? They have to decide that. And, you know, I think some of the challenge that elected officials have faced is that they're getting mixed messages from the public. And I think as the public begins to sort that out, maybe it gets a little easier for the elected officials.
I don't think they're getting mixed messages from the public. I mean, people don't want to pay taxes. I mean, that's from time immemorial.
What about the tolling?
Is a joke. I mean, the public absolutely does not want tolling. The politicians keep throwing that down, but tolling's not going to happen. So I would say it's a lot easier than you say, Jason. I'd say they have to raise the gas tax, but nobody wants to raise the gas tax. And that,
you know,
you have to bring more money.
I think if you look at the polling on that, nobody wants to pay more in taxes. But people also, you know, when you look at, you know, you see projects like a couple in the Milwaukee area, like the I-94 East-West project get delayed. You know, that's also unpopular. You know, so I think as more projects get delayed, the public gets to really sort of grapple with that and decide what they want to do.
Is there anything more fraudulently named than freeways, though?
I
mean, they're not free.
I, for one, know I've spent far too much of my life on the Zoo Interchange, sitting in traffic and construction and crashes. But
as you always say, you park in a driveway, and you drive on a parkway, and life is confusing, Bill.
Okay, well, thank you, Jason. Thanks for taking the tough questions. I'll give this next one to Bill. Tanisha asked, my son goes to high school. What subject should he take to get a good job at Foxconn? I think that's a little bit to be determined depending on what types of jobs they're hiring for, but it sounds like tech schools are a big winner in the Foxconn deal.
Tech schools are a big winner, but I think that, you know, for any student today, I think that the two major, you know, math and science. Are the two courses and the two ways of getting jobs in the 21st century, and also to have good skills in terms of English, in terms of reading and writing. I mean, these are basics, and they will serve you in any job, whether it's at Foxconn or any other firm. It's still too early to tell how many jobs are going to be at Foxconn, what those jobs will be, but, you know, I think anybody would tell you math and science.
Okay. We got another one on Twitter that came in from RS. And Jason, I think we'll start with... Oh, okay. We'll actually go to Bill. What changes do you... Essentially, to give people background, Peter Barca had been the Dem leader. He now is replaced by Gordon Hintz. He had some controversy. What changes do you think we'll see in the Dem caucus?
Well, he's going to try to keep the ever small Democratic caucus together. I think the biggest change that you'll see is he's going to have to go into an election year. He's going to have to recruit candidates so they can start winning back seats. I think that's probably first and foremost what he has to do. And he will be judged on how well Democrats do at the polls going forward. Barca lost his post because the caucus had lost confidence in him because of his support of Foxconn. They thought it went too far, but Barca was from that area of the state,
right,
had to support it. But
Kenosha.
And you know, it's interesting. I thought about making Gordon Hintz a loser this week. He won, but can you imagine leading a caucus that's absolutely irrelevant to governing right now, and it has been for years. So, you know, he's going to have to deal with all of the different currents and winds in that caucus, and he's going to have to recruit candidates so they can go out and perhaps win back some seats. That should be a pretty decent election landscape for them, especially if the redistricting case goes in the favor of Democrats, where they'll have to redraw the lines. But it's not a job I'd want.
It's interesting because it seems like Foxconn was really what kind of pushed this all, what pushed him to lose his seat. But it also seems like Democrats have been losing seats for, you know, year after year. It seems like every election, when you think like, okay, they've hit rock bottom, they can't lose any more seats, they lose seats and Republicans pick them up, and it seems like they're just in a pretty deep hole right now.
There was that seat outside.
Obviously, redistricting is a big...
Redistricting, the seat they lost in Wausau a couple of years back, you know, where the Democratic candidate basically got firebombed by money at the very end of the election cycle there. So Democrats are certainly on their heels. That you could almost move that caucus into a telephone booth, if you remember what a telephone booth was. It's pretty small, and it can be pretty fractious. So, you know, good luck to Mr. Hintz. I think he's going to need it.
To be fair, the Assembly is not the only body that's been losing seats. The Senate Democrats caucus has also shrunk, too. So it's not just a Peter Barca thing. But
no,
it's
absolutely not.
Obviously something they're going to be talking about heading into the next elections. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are out of time, but thanks a lot. And please join us next week for JS on Politics.